Hallo und herzlich willkommen zu einer neuen Folge von Finance Forward, die sicherlich aus dem normalen Programm heraussticht. Uns ist es nämlich nach einem langen Vorlauf gelungen, den Stripe-Gründer John Collison für den Finance Forward und OMR-Podcast zu bekommen. John hat mit seinem Bruder Patrick wohl eine der beeindruckendsten Gründungsgeschichten der Welt zu erzählen. Die beiden sind sehr jung aus einem kleinen irischen Dorf in Silicon Valley ausgewandert und haben dort den Payment-Anbieter Stripe gegründet. Damals waren sie 19 und 21 Jahre alt. Mittlerweile zählt Stripe zu den größten Startups der Welt und wird aktuell mit 50 Milliarden Dollar bewertet. Zeitweise lag der Wert sogar bei knapp 100 Milliarden. Über den Aufstieg, die Payment-Branche und die Konkurrenten haben wir mit dem Stripe-Gründer gesprochen. Das Interview habe ich zusammen mit dem OMR-Gründer Philipp Westermeier geführt. Viel Spaß damit.
Hi, John.
Hey, it's glad to be here.
Yeah, you're in Dublin, right?
Yes, that's right.
Are you most of the time in Dublin?
No, these days I'm mostly in San Francisco, but I go back and forth. It's really nice to get home, so I'm working from our Dublin office at the moment.
Okay. And your big story today is Stripe, obviously one of the most successful, most valuable startups, if you like, but it's a company now. It's a grown-up company out of Europe ever. What's the current valuation?
We just 50 billion was the financing that we just did.
50 billion. So like for all the listeners that are not exactly in the details, if it was a German company, it would be one of the most valuable German companies of all of them. I mean, is it the most valuable Irish company right now?
Well, Ireland is complicated because there are so many companies headquartered in Ireland. So I don't know, but no, the last few years have been good to us. By the way, when you say if Stripe was a German company, of course, I think one of the challenges is that Germany does not celebrate its winners and its leaders enough. Is one of the things I noticed. So I think probably if Stripe was a German company, maybe still Germans would not. You know, Irish people know about Stripe. But maybe, you know, if Stripe was a German company, Germans would not know about Stripe, because I find that there is lots of, when I go there, there's lots of exciting entrepreneurship happening in, you know, in Munich, companies like Celonis or Personio or things like that. But somehow they don't penetrate the popular consciousness broadly across Germany in the same way as they do in other countries. I don't know. Do you think that's fair?
Yeah, I hear that quite a bit. I hear that quite a bit. Yeah. And we try to change that actually a little bit. I mean, OMR is all about showcasing entrepreneurs.
That's true. I don't need to pitch you on this.
Yeah. But I mean, let's start from the beginning. I mean, many of the our listeners maybe hear the Stripe case not for the first time, but for one of the earlier times. Take us back. And I mean, and also Stripe wasn't your first company. So take us back all the way to your first company, I think, at age 17 in Dublin somewhere.
Yes. Okay, so Stripe's mission is to grow the GDP of the internet, to make it easier to do business online. That is how we think about what we're doing. But obviously, that's not how we started the company. And I think that's an important thing is, you know, as companies, as tech companies grow up, they maybe get better at telling their story and explaining what they're doing. But you say, okay, well, just like in the very beginning, what was going on? And that actually ties to what you referenced our previous company, which was a software as a service business that we were building. And it was making life easier for eBay sellers to manage their auctions. But what was interesting is you have to rewind now. This was in the 2007-2008 period. And if you rewind...
You were 17, right?
I was 17 when we started it. And if you rewind to this time, it was a very exciting time to be in technology. I mean, 2007 is when Apple launched the iPhone you know, you had the smartphone explosion to come. Everything was still moving online. There was still a lot of growth ahead. And so we were building this software company, and it was, you know, all the web frameworks for building a web property were great. Cloud hosting was becoming a thing, so you did not have to manage your own servers. You could build a global internet business with a relatively light capital investment. So all these trends were going in a good direction. But we found, again, we were building this software as a service company. This was the company before Stripe. And we found that the hardest part about building the business was accepting money from our customers. You know, we could build the software and we could get it in the hands of the customers and they liked the product and everything like that. But just collecting revenue from people around the world was very challenging because you basically had to work with the traditional banks who did not understand internet businesses very well. And so they did not understand that you probably wanted to be a global business. You know, you don't just want to sell to customers in Germany. You want to sell to customers in, you know, many of the businesses on Stripe in Germany are selling to, you know, people in 100 different countries. You're selling to people all over the world. You want to move quickly. You're selling software. So this was actually the previous business we started was how we got the idea for Stripe. We said it should not be so hard to move money on the internet. And a few years later, Patrick and I started Stripe.
Die Werbung.
Wir machen eine kurze Unterbrechung für unseren Werbepartner Liquid. Viele von euch werden es kennen, das Streben nach Selbstoptimierung und dem ständigen Drang, sich weiterzuentwickeln. Die hohen Anforderungen an sich selbst übertragen sich auch oft auf andere Bereiche des Lebens. Umso spannender ist es, dass viele erfolgreiche Menschen nicht denselben Anspruch bei ihren Finanzen entwickeln. Wer aber kein Anlageprodukt von der Stange, sondern hochwertige, maßgeschneiderte Anlagelösungen und einen persönlichen Ansprechpartner sucht, sollte einmal bei Liquid vorbeischauen. Liquid ist ein moderner Vermögensverwalter auf Family Office Niveau. Spezialisiert darauf, Anlegern einen exklusiven Zugang zu Anlagelösungen zu bieten, die bisher nur Großanlegern zur Verfügung standen. Mit Liquid erhaltet ihr nicht nur Zugang zu erstklassigem Wealth Management, sondern auch zu den weltweit führenden Venture Capital und Private Equity Fonds. Wer sich jetzt eben ertappt gefühlt hat und seine Finanzen weiterentwickeln möchte, bekommt hier seinen Reminder, sich einen Moment Zeit zu nehmen. Alle Infos und ein erstes persönliches Gespräch bekommt ihr auf www.liquid.de/ffwd.
Werbung Ende.
So which role did your parents play in that plans to found a company to become an entrepreneur?
I mean, our parents were very supportive of all the, I think, unusual things that we wanted to do. And there were many. And, you know, I think we maybe growing up, we thought we were just following our own plans. But actually, you know, then later on, you reflect and you see the parents' influence. Patrick got a computer from Santa Claus, you know, one year and started programming with that. And then we both decided to go to the United States for university. And I think that was very formative. And the other interesting thing, of course, is both of our parents ran their own businesses. Our dad ran a hotel, and our mum ran a company that did training for employees. And at the time we just thought this was normal. This is what people do. But maybe it was actually a somewhat formative influence.
Okay, so that first company you started in Ireland, but it took you to Silicon Valley.
We started in Ireland, and then we moved to the United States.
And then you sold it early, I would say.
Well, exactly. We sold it early. I mean, we were only working on it for a year or two before it was sold. But again, I think it was very valuable as an experience because firstly, you know, no one comes out of the womb knowing how to be an entrepreneur. There are certain things that you just need to try and fail at and make the mistakes so that you have the experience. And so it was useful in that way. But again, I think the most useful thing by far was it actually gave us the direct hands-on experience with building an internet business and dealing with payments for it that led fairly directly to the Stripe idea.
But if I get it correctly, between those two companies, I mean, the first one and then Stripe, you did a brief college visit to Harvard University?
Yes, I started at Harvard and I lasted one semester. Two semesters there, and then we started working on Stripe, and so I ended up dropping out of Harvard for that.
So, what was your plans when you started university? What was your dreams?
You know, the funny thing is, when I was going to university, my mother made me promise that it's like, okay, but if you're going, you have to go do the full thing and not drop out, because Patrick had already dropped out of college by that stage. And so she knew that there was maybe some bad influences afoot, or, you know, maybe there was trouble on the horizon. And so when I was going to college, she said, you know, okay, but if you're going, you're going for the full 4 years. And I said, yes, absolutely. And at the time, I really meant that, you know what I mean? That was my plan at the time, but I only lasted a year.
Oh, what's the magic sauce? What did your parents do right to get two brothers that go into Harvard and then also both drop out? what was the key ingredient?
Look, I think there's always a lot of luck in these things. Such that, you know, it would be a mistake to try to look too much at the ingredients, because, you know, again, we started Stripe just as the mobile revolution was taking off, where, you know, iPhones and Androids were getting in the hands of everyone, and you had the growth of, you know, marketplaces and e-commerce companies and things like that. So I think we benefited from all these tailwinds. But I think, you know, what we benefited from our parents, I think, was just seeing up close all of the hard work and the grind that goes into entrepreneurship, and that there's a lot of glamorizing of entrepreneurship that happens. There's a lot of mythologizing that happens, especially in Silicon Valley. It's favorite activity, you know, to go back and rewrite the origin stories of companies and clean them up and everything like that. And so I think seeing firsthand just entrepreneurship up close was maybe useful to get a sense for it. And then again, I think the technical skills are important. And again, this should be, you know, especially say with the coming AI wave, this should be one of Germany's biggest assets, is the deep respect for the hard skills around math and computer science. And I think our parents valued that. You know, our dad was an electrical engineer by training, and we were very much encouraged to pursue those things.
So what was the dynamic between you and your brother, like back then, but also like evolving throughout the journey of Stripe?
I think the most helpful thing is simply that Patrick and I work very closely together. We have quite complementary skill sets, and just can do this for a long time. And our plan is to be working on Stripe for the coming decades. And with infrastructure companies in particular, you know, we spent the last 10 years of Stripe building out a lot of the foundations. I think we're now getting to the point where we can do some of the really interesting stuff. And for example, expand to countries where there is a much less developed digital economy and be part of making that happen. Or, you know, we're building up a big software part of the business at Stripe, which is kind of different from the core payments engine. But anyway, to do these things, you simply need to be able to work on the problem for a long time. And have a long-term time horizon. And it sounds simple, but just many co-founding teams are kind of unstable and split up. I mean, you look at a lot of the kind of successful tech companies, and, you know, maybe some of the co-founders are still around, but some of them aren't. And so I think having a very stable, high-trust team in which you can work for decades is underappreciated. And, you know, Charlie Munger often talks about Stripe Press is republishing his book, which I really enjoy, Poor Charlie's Almanac, which is kind of a collection of his wisdom. And one of the things he often talks about is just avoiding the big mistakes being one of the keys to success, you know, like do generally sensible things and avoid the big mistakes. And I think in terms of the relationship with Patrick, again, not to damn him with faint praise, but I think us being able to work well together over a very long time period is actually part of the powerful thing, because just many co-founding teams don't do it.
Let's get into the business model for a second. I mean, like, how does Stripe make money? What does Stripe do for somebody that hasn't used it so far?
Okay, so Stripe helps businesses run their online operations and accept money from their customers. And so, you know, the that might mean accepting credit card payments, accepting SEPA payments, you know, direct debit, Klarna, even now PayPal, we support and things like this. And so if you tomorrow decided that, you know, we do a lot of work with media companies. Axel Springer recently started using Stripe for subscriptions. If you decided that you wanted to make the OMR podcast a subscription model and people could sign up on the website and start paying, you know, €5 a month for it, Stripe would be the perfect thing to do that, to charge money to your customers.
But and it's a solution that works with all the other payment solutions in the back. So, I mean, to enable PayPal, one would use Stripe. To enable a Visa card or whatever, one would use Klarna, one would use Stripe. Is that correct?
Correct. And, you know, there's many different layers of the, you know, there's many different pieces to the payments puzzle. And so the way you can think about it is Stripe is the service for businesses trading online to solve all their problems. Because you think about it, a business selling to their customers, you know, you ask, well, do you want this to be Visa or a bank payment or PayPal? They'll say, I don't care. I just want it to be easy for my customer to pay me and then I can get on with my life. And so we very much take the focus of simplifying life for the business. And that's actually led to kind of all the expansions that we have done to date. And so, for example, you know, businesses will say, okay, I want to have a subscription engine where it's easy for me to track all of my customers and how much they owe and everything like that. You know, we offered that. Or, you know, businesses say dealing with VAT is very complex and maybe you can handle sales taxes and VAT for me and we'll go do that. So again, we're about making life simple for the business when it comes to collecting their revenue online so that they can actually focus on the product. You know, again, if you're doing the OMR podcast, you want to focus on booking great podcast guests and not handling the payments for it.
And then you take a commission off
correct.
The payment.
Yes.
And the commission is what is it usually? Like if I want to use Stripe now, how much do I have to give you if somebody pays €100 on my shop?
It depends a little bit, you know, on whether it is a local transaction or whether, you know, it's coming from abroad or something like that. But it will generally be between, you know, 1.5% and 3% is the commission that people will pay on transactions.
Okay, and then on top of that, there's the credit card fee or the PayPal fee.
No, that's including that fee. So you will pay that, you know, for the transaction, and that's it. You just pay the commission to Stripe, and we that includes the fees from the payment methods. And one thing, by the way, that I think is quite important about this revenue model that we like is it creates a very strong degree of alignment between us and the businesses selling on Stripe. So you think about it, in certain, you know, say in the advertising models, you have the person who's using the product is not actually the person who is paying for it. And so you get this split kind of famously with those models. But for Stripe, it's just you are using the service and, you know, you'll only pay for it if it's actually worthwhile and providing value to you. But also, if we have a customer and we want to make, you know, 10% more money, the easiest way for us to do that is to help them accomplish 10% more sales. And that is actually relatively commonly possible with a lot of customers because we find people selling is under-optimized. You know, maybe they are not offering the right payment methods or maybe their checkout is too confusing and they're losing customers at the point of checkout. And so we really like that this revenue model of the transactional fee has a high degree of alignment where we just want businesses on Stripe to be successful and generate a lot of revenue. We like that.
And what's your most important partner? I mean, is it PayPal? Is it who do you work the most with?
I mean, the largest, you know, payment method generally in e-commerce is the credit cards, Visa and MasterCard. But we're seeing a lot of growth of things like open banking and kind of bank transfer schemes in general, especially around Europe. And so I would say those are growing quite nicely. And then, of course, you have other new payment methods like the buy now, pay later payment methods, which maybe were not a big thing 10 years ago. And now you have companies like Klarna that are very big.
When you look at PayPal and Klarna, you have two big payment companies who are B2B and B2C companies. So was it also, is it like a plan from you for the future to become a consumer brand someday?
We are very, I think at heart, PayPal and Klarna are consumer companies that sell to consumer. And I agree, both do B2B things in various places. But if you ask them what they really care about, I think what they care about is, being a large network, being a large, well-known brand amongst consumers. Whereas Stripe, again, we are squarely focused on, there are millions of businesses on the platform. That could be, anyone from a brand new startup that's, just incorporated yesterday, all the way up to Amazon runs on Stripe, and you have, Meta using Stripe, and all of these other kind of very large companies. And we are squarely focused on making those businesses successful. And so you probably see Stripe around the internet when you do your buying. Hopefully you've seen the Stripe checkout in various places, and it's been very easy and smooth for you. And so you will see Stripe more and more over time. But as a business, we squarely focus on selling to businesses and making them successful.
So when you're looking in the next decade, you already told us that you're planning to stay on board for the next decade. So what is your product vision for Stripe, and what kind of fintech business model you also want to disrupt, for example, banking as a service and so on?
So I think the core business model for Stripe will remain the same, which is firstly, making it easy for businesses to accept payments and move money around online, and then also increasingly being their revenue engine. We have our products that do revenue and finance automation. This is the things I mentioned, like handling subscription billing and doing VAT and things like that. I think those will actually remain relatively consistent over the coming years. But I think the thing that's changing is all of the business models we see in our customers. And a lot of what Stripe will be doing will be helping them adapt to what they need to do. And so, to give you an example, I mean, there's obviously things like, all of the new AI companies coming along. And those companies actually need to monetize sooner than, say, consumer internet companies, because the costs are so high, right? They're paying for so many GPUs. And so you have companies like OpenAI and Midjourney even some German AI companies, as Aleph Alpha and people like that. And they're using Stripe to actually charge for their products. But amongst the larger companies, we see this trend towards, I think larger companies are maybe revisiting their middlemen, or the people who are intermediating the relationship with their customers. And often they want to go directly and sell directly to their consumers online, where they would not have done so previously. And so this could be anything from, we have toy manufacturers, we have Simba Dickey, who's now selling the Bobby car directly to their customers on Stripe. We also have Stihl is selling, again, directly over the internet to their customers. We have Ford and BMW and a number of the automakers. For some reason, we're seeing a lot of automakers at the moment. Again, they all want to have a direct relationship with their customer rather than being intermediated through a dealer. And so they are starting to build out payment services on Stripe. And so anyway, kind of backing up, all of the large companies see this very rapidly changing environment in front of them. They know that they actually need to change their product proposition. And so then the Stripe platform needs to be able to reflect that and support them doing that.
Isn't that an area where you collide with also companies that come from the shop system side? I mean, we've spoken to Tobias Lütke, who's a Shopify guy. And I mean, if I follow them correctly, it seems like they're also, the approach is the same. I mean, they come from the shop side, they do not do payment. Do you also think about doing or offering the whole shop logistics and everything?
We actually have a very deep partnership with Shopify and have for 10 years. And so They built Shopify Payments, which is powered by Stripe. And so anytime a Shopify store starts selling online, that will be powered by Stripe underneath the hood. And that is how they can offer such a robust set of payment methods in so many countries. So that's been a very large and successful business for them. So I think there is this sort of division of responsibility where we make the payments really easy to work well, and then Shopify and the other companies in that space make it very easy to handle the store part. And so I think we have our respective lanes that work quite well.
To understand everything, then, who's your fiercest competitor in the end?
So it's actually quite fractured, and so you have the largest competitor by far is kind of the traditional banks where, you know, in the United States, Chase or Bank of America or someone will offer payment services. And in every country, you know, in France, it would be Soc Gen. You know, in everywhere you go, there's a set of banks who provide these services. There are some dedicated payment companies, you know, payment service providers who provide companies. And there's a large number of those. And there's oftentimes when companies switch to Stripe, it's because they're moving off a very old school legacy provider, like someone like a Worldpay. I don't know if you've heard of them, but yeah, the technology is very old and the payments environment is changing very quickly. And so it does not meet their needs. Maybe it met their needs 10 years ago, but it doesn't meet their needs today when you need to be able to support SEPA or bank transfer payments. And, you know, their platform is not good for that. And then, you know, PayPal has, you know, an offering here. But again, increasingly, we are collaborating with them where we offer the PayPal payment method on Stripe in Germany.
So Adyen is also one of your big competitors, right?
Mm-hmm. It's a Dutch company. So everybody that's big in that space comes out of Europe, seemingly.
Exactly, yes.
Why is that?
Well, one of the things that's very important in the payment space is getting the global nuances right. And if you look at what Stripe makes easy, it kind of translates the differences across borders on behalf of the business. Because again, the business wants to be able to sell to customers all over the world. And you know, OpenAI uses Stripe to sell ChatGPT. And they just want ChatGPT to be able to, you know, to be available to users globally in all these countries. And again, it so happens that, you know, maybe a Dutch user will want to pay with Ideal, or, you know, someone in India will want to pay with UPI, or there will be all these regional differences. But again, the businesses selling don't want to have to think about those differences. And so I think maybe, you know, as a European, you're exposed to all these differences early on, and you see the places where, you know, through the EU, kind of the single market works well. And you also see the limits of the single market. You know, like in the single digital market, we've been talking about that for a long time. And, you know, it hasn't really happened yet. And so Stripe is trying to help accelerate that and make that happen. And so anyway, this is maybe, you know, getting a bit speculative. But I think as a European, you become very aware of the subtle differences in culture and business culture across countries. And again, Stripe is a translation layer where it's making it easy for businesses to do business in all these different countries around the world. And, you know, maybe growing up in Europe is helpful for that.
So Adyen was growing a little bit faster recently, and it's also profitable. So how do you see Stripe in comparison to that competitor?
Yeah, you know, they disclose metrics on, I think, a half-yearly basis, and we do not disclose metrics. And so it becomes very hard to compare because growth rates shift around and you're dealing with sparse data points. But I would say, you know, we are focused on a few things where, as far as we can tell, we are the only company kind of seriously going after those opportunities. And so there ends up being a little bit of a difference in focus. Firstly, we focus on making it very, very easy for startups to get going on Stripe. And so you see this in the product suite where we offer a self-serve offering where, you know, if you wanted to after this, go sign up for Stripe. You know, you get maybe I convinced you on the OMR subscriptions idea. And so you start setting up the subscriptions. After this podcast, you know, later today, you could go sign up for a Stripe account and you could get up and running with payments. That is not possible on any of the other providers that we've been talking about, where you have to go through sales and fill out all the paperwork and take a few weeks, everything like that. And so as a result, a very large fraction of startups generally, of you know, startups in Germany, end up getting going on Stripe. And so that is one of the places where we compete quite aggressively. And then the second is we're very focused on developers and developer efficiency. And we have had an API-based strategy, and some things have been written on this that I think are reasonably perceptive. But when you think about the trends in the world, software developers' time and development efficiency is the most scarce resource that we have. It's the most scarce resource going. And so again, many of the enterprises now that come to us, the reason they're coming to us is that they have an initiative that they want to make happen that's very key to the transformation underway in their business. And it can't take 2 years. You know, that's not possible. They need to be able to empower their developers and have it happen in, you know, 3 months. And so, again, I think that focus on the API has been quite helpful.
So isn't it a problem for the future that this payment space will be disrupted all the time and new player will emerge with new technology and will lower the margin further and further?
Oh, I think it's healthy, right? I mean, you want it to be a vibrant competitive space with lots of people. And we're very happy having to compete for our business. And, you know, if there's better options out there, then, you know, people should go use those better options. But we don't see there being any better options out there. And, you know, we are very focused on making Stripe the best platform for businesses. But I think, again, in the Silicon Valley narrative, it's a bit too much discussion of, you know, moats and lock-in and all these things. Ultimately, you know, and especially we deal with very discerning businesses. Like you think of these tech businesses, they're very smart you know, they're able to kind of make sound decisions. And so we think if we're the best platform, they'll use us. If we're not, they'll use someone else. And that's how business should work.
So what are your plans, especially for Europe? How do you want to grow here in Germany and in the other countries of Europe?
So, this has been, we've been in the European market for 10 years, almost since we started. We're dual headquartered between San Francisco and Dublin. And, you know, we were discussing beforehand, I end up getting home to Ireland quite a bit. And we run a lot of our European operation or our global operations out of Dublin. And so we want to be the best platform bar none for European businesses. And again, I think there's two trends that we are a very helpful beneficiary from. One is that the European tech scene is night and day from when when Patrick and I left Ireland. And so you just kind of compare the number of unicorns here or the startup scene, or again, the fact that we're talking about the local, you know, SaaS and AI ecosystem, that just wasn't a thing 10 years ago. It wasn't happening. And then secondly, I think you have a lot of older European companies that are taking the transformation of their businesses seriously. We actually just very recently started working with Lotus, you know, the car company from the James Bond films, the underwater. They don't sell the underwater ones, sadly, but you know, again, they just started selling directly to their customers, you know, using Stripe. You know, we talked about some of the traditional German Mittelstand companies that are again starting to do direct to consumer, or maybe they're building a B2B marketplace where they want to facilitate payments within their ecosystem. We actually have some, like, there are some amazing companies. I don't know if you're familiar with Spare Parts Now, but Tobias is the most German user we have, where it is all these kind of finely machined parts that previously it was very hard to, you know, find good distribution for these things. And so again, you would end up with middlemen who are taking a very large cut, maybe for not providing that much value. Whereas now you can have an internet-enabled marketplace for these, you know, machined parts and do it in a much more efficient way, where the end manufacturers of these parts are earning much more of the spoils and not having to pay so much in the form of distribution. And so again, there are all these changes happening in the business environment where the way these companies are doing business today is totally different from 10 or 20 years ago. And Stripe is powering a lot of that change.
Are you bullish on Europe as an economy compared to the US or to China or to other parts of the world?
Oh, for sure. I mean, Europe is just the world's largest economic bloc, and it has so many tailwinds available to it. I mean, there's things that we have to manage and there's things that we have to get out of our way on. Like there are some places where we would love to see more EU standardization and integration. But broadly speaking, I mean, I think you have to be optimistic.
I mean, there's a lot of talk about like two big blocks in the world, China and the US, Europe somewhere lost in the middle, like aging population.
But I find the European, you know, narrative you know, Germans are kind of pessimistic by nature. And so, again, I think they find the glass half empty to talk about. And for example, yeah, I find that when I come to Europe, people talk about being left behind by China and by the US. If you look at the rate of unicorn creation, just as a proxy for the overall tech ecosystem and the health, the last few years were much better for Europe than they were for China in terms of the rate of new large tech businesses being created. And so I think kind of the facts don't bear out the pessimism.
Who else do you talk to in Europe as like founders that you have like maybe on eye level with you? Who else is there? I mean, is there, there's probably like Spotify that you should talk to. You mentioned a couple of German companies. Who else do you perceive as like similar size, similar positioned as Stripe?
I mean, there's all sorts of folks. There's, I mean, we're quite excited by what's happening in fintech, so we follow that closely. And, you know, we work with companies like N26 and Solaris and Wise. I really like those guys. And then I'm a big fan of the Intercom guys. That's another Irish company headquartered out of Dublin. We know the Spotify folks, obviously, and they're actually doing something very cool with Stripe, where they are making it where you know, they're doing a creator economy product where they built the ability to receive payments from Spotify because, you know, if you are uploading content to the service, they need to be able to actually pay you out. And again, that's the kind of thing that was very difficult with traditional payments infrastructure. And so we've good relationships with them about that. But I'm excited by just all of the SaaS that's happening. There's much more software as a service, and so I think again, Celonis is a very impressive company that that no one has really heard of, and Personio and companies like this. But again, there's a lot happening, and I think Europe and in particular Germany tends to undercelebrate its wins.
I mean, you have like some of the most famous investors in the world that invested in Stripe. Can you just name a few who's like invested in your company?
I mean, the major VCs are Sequoia Capital, Thrive. They were very very helpful and impactful in the latest round, where they were the largest investors in that. There's Founders Fund. Exactly. That's Peter Thiel's firm, and Y Combinator. They were very helpful early on, and many of our initial customers were Y Combinator companies.
What did they like so much in the early days? I mean, looking back, why did they all want to invest in you? I mean, it's like two guys from Ireland. Like, how did you convince them?
Our most effective tactic early on with fundraising was we would explain what Stripe did and making payments easy showing them the product and everything like that. And we had a good demo where we would actually charge, you know, we would create a new account and actually charge their credit card and show how quickly you could start using the product. So the demo is compelling. But then the most effective tactic we had is we would tell them, just go talk to your portfolio companies about payments and whether it's easy or hard, whether you think this is a problem worth working on. And like, we haven't talked to your portfolio card, like talk to any of them. We don't know which. And so this was not staged by us. We didn't know even who they would ask, but invariably they would ask one of their portfolio companies and the founder would say, oh my God, it is the most annoying thing that we have to deal with. It's so silly. We're working with banks who just do not understand our business. And you know, they would have to hold the phone further away from their ear to avoid it hurting their ear from all the yelling they got from the founder on the other end. And so I think that really helped convince investors that there was a significant opportunity here. And again, I think this is the thing that maybe founders these days, there's a bit of a lost art, or it's one of the most important things they focus on, is if you just... You know, we didn't have very many customers early on when we went to raise money. I think when we raised our Series A, we probably had 100 customers or something like this. It wasn't very many. But those customers really liked Stripe and they were big fans of the product. And so if you can create something that a small set of people are very passionate about, I think it's much simpler than to expand it to a larger set of people being passionate about you.
How come you're so passionate about this model? I mean, you seem like a very dynamic, well-connected young person. I mean, it sounds
like... Why did we pick such a boring problem?
Exactly. Somebody like, you should be in AI or should be like doing, I don't know, space rockets or social media platforms or whatever is the latest shit. But I mean, you do payments. How come?
This is really important. And look, many people think it's boring and that's totally fine. But we think that the internet economy is just one of the most exciting things happening these decades. And the fact that you have a global coordination mechanism where now, you know, you in sitting in Germany can buy products from all over the world, and they're much higher quality than, you know, the products that you might have gotten if you only had the selection available to you kind of locally, narrowly. You have this broader selection and you have this abundance. And then similarly, people in faraway countries can earn much better incomes because they're selling to the global economy rather than locally. We think that's very important. And we think it would be like, there are some bad outcomes possible here. We think if there are a bunch of separate internet economies, you know, there's the Chinese internet economy and the Indian internet economy and the German internet economy, and they're all kind of in their own little, fenced in their own little enclosures, we think that would be bad. We similarly think it would be bad if it became too complex to run an internet business. And, you know, with GDPR this and VAT that and all the different regulations, there's so many different payment methods. Sure, I mean, Amazon can figure that out and Zalando can figure that out. But how is a small startup going to figure out how to move money online? That would be really bad because the engine of dynamism is startups being able to get going and compete on a level playing field with the larger companies. And so we think this work is actually quite important and quite exciting because you're trying to turn the crank, you know, turn the engine of dynamism faster and faster.
So that purpose fuels your passion.
Yes.
Okay. Wow. I mean, but no concerns that the whole AI thing and everything is there's so much growth and so much potential, like apparently now in this space, and you in a space that's like has maybe the most dynamic times already behind it.
I think we should all be extremely excited about AI as consumers and end users, because I think it will just make all the software products we use so much better, and there will be very significant productivity gains. And I think those productivity gains will be hard for any one company to capture. Like, I think one of the surprising things is the rate of advancement in AI is going so quickly, and yet you have so many different companies in such a competitive field. I think people might have predicted that there would be one company that's running away from the prize. But instead, you look and, you know, you have OpenAI and you have Google and you have Anthropic and you have Facebook with its open source model that is very high quality. It's a very competitive field. I think that should make one quite excited. And of course, they're all, again, building on Stripe, which we're also excited by.
Are you talking a lot to Peter Thiel, Elon Musk, and those guys? I mean, you're like, you know them, you're close to them. Some of them are investors. Some of them you work for. I mean, with Stripe as a service provider, is that like a network that you frequently converse with?
Well, we know them, but we don't talk. We don't talk too quickly. I think Elon's probably busy training for his cage match.
Yeah, that was my question. Like, I mean, is the internet in a good place with all these weird dynamics going on right now in your mind?
I don't know. It's certainly very interesting. Like, it's interesting to watch the current, you know, Threads versus Twitter competition. And again, I think all this competition is good. And so I'm just watching it and kind of interested.
So are you on Threads already?
You don't follow me?
we have to find a hack and a workaround here in Germany first to be able to sign up.
Because it's not launched here. Yeah.
There's the data privacy protections and mm-hmm. right now, like, everybody in Germany that cares is working its way around
the
and
VPN,
changing
yeah.
its Apple ID and everything.
Oh, that's funny.
But I managed to make the workaround.
how big is Stripe right now in terms of revenue?
We don't disclose revenue figures, but in terms of payment volumes, last year was just over $800 billion in payment volumes. And, you know, this year will be roughly $1 trillion in payment volume for the year 2023. And so that's, one of the metrics we track closely in terms of the overall size.
So if I just do it very simply, like 1 billion, is that what you said?
You know, 1 trillion. So
one trillion. Okay, again, 1 trillion.
So, but it's hard to back out the revenue. You won't be able to.
I'm doing it very carefully. I'm just taking 1%. 1% is on the lower end.
Again, it didn't quite work that way, but
why not?
Just again for complex reasons that get into the financials that we don't disclose.
Okay, but I mean, if it was like just 1% of that number, it would be quite a good revenue. What do you spend so much money on? I mean, Kasper just mentioned the company is, I think, at least numbers that I can look at, it's not profitable yet. Where do you spend all the money on?
Well, again, we don't disclose any financial metrics. So that is Casper's contention that we're not profitable, not ours. We invest very heavily in R&D, research and development. And in particular, we think that most of the growth of the internet economy is in the future. And so it would be a mistake to try to run too profitably right now. And again, you see that with kind of many other payment companies where they are kind of run purely for profit. Whereas we think it's important to get all of the foundational technology right and in place first. And so that is why we are building out, say, for example, the software that I mentioned that makes it easy to collect subscription revenue online. And so this is Stripe billing, and then this is Stripe tax for VAT and sales tax management. There's revenue recognition, things like this. These are not products that other payment companies do. You know, any of the payment companies that we discussed, they don't have equivalent products like this. And I think these software products are a big part of, again, what makes it easy to build a business on Stripe, and why, you know, again, we're talking about the AI wave. All of these AI companies that are building on Stripe, I think these products are a big part of why they chose Stripe. It's, again, it makes it so easy to collect subscription revenue from customers around the world. And so I think you have to invest really deeply in R&D if you want to win in this space.
Okay, so the biggest cost factor for your company is then
technology investment. Like, yeah.
Personnel in the end.
Yeah.
Okay, and then how many people work for Stripe right now?
7,000.
7,000. And they're mostly developers?
Certainly technology is the largest part of Stripe. Wow. I say technology because, you know, developers, designers, product management, everything like this. So.
Die Werbung.
Wir machen eine kurze Unterbrechung für Werbung in eigener Sache und ein Reminder für die Bewerbungsphase der Finance Forward Masterclasses. Am 7. und 8. Mai findet in Hamburg zum dritten Mal die Finance Forward Konferenz statt. Neben vier Programmen auf den Bühnen bekommt ihr außerdem an beiden Konferenztagen auch die Möglichkeit, an einer der Finance Forward Masterclasses teilzunehmen. Für einen der Plätze müsst ihr euch aber jetzt bewerben. Schaut dafür am besten so schnell wie möglich auf financefwd.com/masterclasses vorbei und bewerbt euch mit eurem Konferenzticket. Hier ein kleiner Auszug. Bei Adyen bekommt ihr 90 Minuten Deep Dive zum Thema Payment und wie Get Your Guide und Blue Tomato mit nahtlosem Zahlungsverkehr revolutionieren. Mastercard spricht über das wichtige Thema Gender Tech Gap und Felix 1 über Fallstricke in internationalem Onlinehandel.
Werbung Ende.
So Stripe's valuation exploded during the last year. So the peak was $95 billion. So how was the feeling to lead such a company in such a hype time of e-commerce?
I mean, I think you can probably imagine 2021 was just a little bit of a crazy time where there was so much growth, there was so much expansion during COVID. And so I think the main thing that was good about that period that I think has stuck around is that especially more established businesses that maybe previously did not have a very successful e-commerce arm, or, you know, maybe they had a chief digital innovation officer, but he kind of sat in an office somewhere else and wrote, ideas, and no one really listened to the ideas. During COVID, they started listening to that person and they said, oh, crap, we got to actually take this stuff seriously because we're an entirely online business now. And that mindset shift has stayed around post-COVID. And so I think there are lots of, you know, I think there are lots of parts of 2021 where things went a bit silly. And I think it's good that some measure of sanity has returned. But I think that aspect of 2021 is very good that that has stuck around.
So Stripe was also an example of a company which stayed private for a long time, a positive example in that times. So from today, looking back, did you miss a little bit the chance to go public also during that IPO boom?
No, we've always been clear with people that Stripe is not in any rush to go public. I mean, we've been self-funding the business for many years where the business funds its own investment. You know, I mentioned the technology investment out of the cash flows that the business produces. And again, there's this very aligned business model where, you know, we charge a transaction fee to our customers, and, you know, that produces our revenue, which again, we go invest in expanding the platform and making it do even more things and cover even more countries. So we've been, you know, clear with people for a long time that that is our plan, you know, and that's still our plan. And I think, you know, again, the tech press gets a bit obsessed with IPOs and things like this because they're a shiny moment. But, you know, customers don't care. Customers just want the product to work well.
So you raised a really big funding round recently of $6.5 billion. So your valuation also dropped to $50 billion. So how hard was this for you as a founder and as a shareholder also?
It was a non-event really, where just, I mean, public companies had a similar effect happen, where if you look at any of the public software companies, they had a very sharp stock price growth during, you know, 2021, and then that sold off the following year, and they saw a decline. And, you know, the high tech companies generally declined maybe 50 to 60, 70, 80% sometimes. And so I think everyone who was a shareholder knew that, you know, the valuation environment is different in 2023.
How much percentage of the companies do you still own?
We also don't disclose that.
Okay, not even like your brother and you together or anything? Okay, but did you already sell a lot of shares, or did you just, I mean, sell them away, or did you just give them away for new money in the company?
Again, none of the, you know, financials of the company are things we disclose.
Okay. It's that you're so reluctant to not give any advantages to your competitors, or just to be more private, or what's the thinking?
Yeah, just as a private company, you know, we don't disclose any of the financials. We never have. So it's always been how.
So at some point, then there's going to be a huge shock when you go public. That's all going to change, and that's probably not going to be fun then.
I think people are definitely curious. Yeah, that's for sure. And, you know, we've
look at me.
Exactly. Yeah, and we've announced various numbers along the way, like the transaction processing figures, like the ones we discussed.
So maybe last question. I think our time is nearly up. So last question: how good are your German skills?
It seemed like good. Ich habe ein bisschen Deutsch gelernt während der Corona-Pandemie.
Whoa, that was all just Corona-Pandemic German.
Yeah.
How come? Why did you decide to do that?
Es war meine kleine Project.
Wow. How did you do that with Duolingo?
I just think it's so exciting to be in technology these days. And sorry, yes, we will have to wrap. But I think it's so exciting to be in technology these days. And, you know, this is another example where Duolingo is really good. I think they took all of the it's very good for the basic stages, you know, for the early stages of language learning. But they took all of the very addictive tactics from video games around, you know, haptics and, you know, creating addictive patterns and applied them to language learning. I think that's very good. And then there is Anki, which is actually an open source app. And it's just a generic flashcard app. But we have learned a lot about spaced repetition last, you know, decades, where it's very important that when you're teaching people, say, vocabulary, that you remind them of the vocabulary just as they're about to forget it. And so you don't want to spend time learning things that you already know. You also don't want to wait too long before reminding yourself. You have to get it just right. And so again, now we have apps that make all this stuff much easier. So if you remember learning languages in high school, it's kind of annoying. You have these exercise books. It feels very slow. Learning languages is just so much easier these days thanks to technology. And so again, I think this is another one of these very optimistic cases for technology, is language learning is totally transformed by it.
And German, is there a German girlfriend involved or anything? Any German ancestors involved?
Yeah. No, I there's a lot of German people in my life.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's interesting.
Yeah.
So that should even like more bring you to Germany at some point, maybe to Hamburg.
Oh, I love visiting Germany. Yeah, no, I would like to get back. And I must get back. You know, we were talking about the Chaos Computer Club the Congress before we started. But I'd love to get back to that as well. That was my last time in Hamburg.
All right.
Sure.
Let's try to continue the conversation and let's stay in touch, and maybe next time here, not for the Chaos Commuter Club but for OMR.
Exactly.
Or Finance Forward.
It's a plan. Sounds good.
Thank you very much, John.
See you
very much, John.
Bye bye.
Dieser Podcast wird produziert von Podstars bei OMR.